Hi, I'm Libba Bray. I hope you enjoyed A Great and Terrible Beauty. If you're anything like me, when you finish a book, you probably like to check out the author bio. I want to know where the author comes from, where she went to school, what influenced her to write the book. Sadly, the author bio is a postage stamp-sized block of copy that's about as revealing as your mom is the first time you say, "Hey, Mom, where did babies come from?" So I thought I'd give you sort of an audio tour of who I am. I mean, other than the fact that I'm from Texas and roll a mean burrito, and how this book came to be. Maybe you're wondering, what does a girl from the flatlands of Texas, a girl who grew up on Monty Python, Cheap Trick, and keg parties, know about Victorian schoolgirls in England? Shouldn't she be writing books about people tipping cows and listening to bad anthemic rock through crackly speakers at the Sonic? Yeah. Maybe. But for some reason, this story about an English girl named Gemma who sees things, a girl with a dead mother, a lot of guilt, strange friends, and a mysterious destiny, well, it just wouldn't let me go. The truth is, I love the Victorian period. It's a fascination of mine, along with indie guitar players and people who can roll their tongues at will. I think it's all that sensuality and repression. Those spooky old estates where things go bump in the night. A culture consumed with appearances, with spiritualism and sex and class and knowing your place. Apparently, Dickens, Bram Stoker, and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle had more of a hold on me than I'd realized. I'd been steeping in Victoriana like a very strong Earl Grey for most of my life without even knowing it. And okay, I'm a sucker for the accent. So how did this book come to be? What was the process from start to finish? Well, climb into my handsome cab and I'll take you along on a ride through my diary and reveal what it took, the good, the bad, the desperate, and the sugar highs, to make A Great and Terrible Beauty. January 5th, 2002. Just got off the phone with Wendy Loggia, my Random House editor and new best friend. Book is due in June. Outline due end of February. That leaves plenty of time to start a new exercise regimen and healthy diet. I will be thin. I will be healthy with glowing skin. I will write a fabulous gothic read and turn it in ahead of schedule. I rock. Therefore, I am. January 15th. Outline 54, not panning out so well. Lots of creepy atmosphere, very little plot. Also, note to self, bag of Tootsie Rolls washed down with Diet Coke does not equal breakfast. Why am I not feeling the Dickens muse? January 31st. It's official. I cannot outline. For me, an outline is like a corset on the mind. I'm a plunger, okay? I'm organic. I'm just going to have to jump into this book with both feet and see where it takes me. And hopefully, that's somewhere I want to be. February. I'm quitting my day job and becoming a professional Victorian researcher. Who knew the 1890s could be this much fun? I've devoured the book Daily Life in Victorian England, approximately 112 million websites on Victorian England and India, and The New Girl, a feminist sociological study of 19th century schoolgirls by Victorian scholar Dr. Sally Mitchell. I now know enough arcane factoids to entertain people at parties for years to come. And I can kill at Trivial Pursuit. Still, there are some things I can't seem to find. I wonder if Dr. Mitchell is open to crazed emails from desperate writers in Brooklyn. February 12th. Dr. Mitchell, or Sally, as I like to call her here in the privacy of my own home, is lovely and accessible and doesn't think I'm a weird stalker type. She answered my questions and suggested I check out L.T. Meade, a Victorian novelist who wrote about girls' boarding schools. She even says there's a Canadian bookseller who has Meade's A World of Girls advertised for $7 on Amazon. I love my job. February 18th. Book arrived today. Wow, these girls had their naughty moments. They even cavorted with the gypsy woman who managed to supply them with contraband food and drink. Gypsies. There's a thought. February 21st. Overheard and neighborhood coffee bar hangout. Two women. I'm thinking of designing a whole gypsy look, you know, big jewelry, red scarves. I interrupt. Actually, a proper gypsy woman would never wear red. That would have been considered really scandalous and bad luck to boot. Oh my God, isn't this chai so yummy? Silence. In the distance, a car backfires. Note to self, not everyone is excited about the research as I am. March 1st. The more things change, the more they stay the same. That's what keeps running through my head. Why do we do this to our girls? Why do we spend a lifetime whittling them down into bite-sized nuggets, something easily digested that will upset no stomach? Why can't we allow them to ask for what they want, to express the whole Roy G. Biv of emotion? Yeah, we say we do, but we don't. Not really. And I can't help wondering, have we really moved very far in 100 years? All right, Gemma, you get in there. You find your destiny, kick some butt, take names, and don't let anyone stop you. Especially not yourself. March 25th. Problem? Kartik seems to disappear mid-book. He's MIA for, I don't know, like 150 pages? Maybe no one will notice. Yeah, right. Kartik, that name. Deep and mysterious and so hot. Who needs to know that Kartik is a guy I used to wait tables with in Texas? A guy I had such a crush on that he had to tell me everything twice, because the first time I was sure I heard, "Will you marry me and bear from your loins my brood of exotic, beautiful children?" And it wasn't until the second time that I actually heard him say, slowly and precisely, "Can you please take the bread to table A4? Kartik, do right by Gemma, okay? Look out for her. And if by chance one night she drinks a few beers and asks if you want to go to a Red Hot Chili Peppers concert with her, be kind. April. What are the realms like? They need to be otherworldly, sort of dreamy and light-filled, like a Maxfield Parrish picture come to life, but a Maxfield Parrish picture that's been painted over something by Hieronymus Bosch. Dark and dangerous, pretty and fairy tale-esque, a little like life.